You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have your company, Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall, in situ and ready for this week's two events. We have the ISPS Handa Vic Open, and we also have the AT&T at Pebble Beach, which is of course the feature. Dave Tindall alongside me here in the studio. First of all, a good morning to you, sir.
Hello Dave, yes, two events to look forward to with the beach.
Yeah,
In the title and being prominent. 13th Beach is the venue for the Vic Open, which I had a look on Google Maps to see how near it was to kind of Melbourne and the Sandbelt courses.
Yep.
Not far. I think if you drive around the coast, it's an hour and a half, but if you take a ferry across from, say, 13th Beach to the Metropolitan where they held the World Cup of Golf, it's about 40 minutes. So we're in that area. So if people want to use sort of Melbourne form, then they can.
And Dave Tindall, we had, just before we get stuck into that Vic Open,
yes,
and Pebble Beach, we had the good, the bad and the ugly last week in Saudi Arabia, with Sergio providing both the bad and the ugly. There was the video of him self-combusting in the bunker on the Friday, the day before he was disqualified for damaging greens. At this juncture, I'll remind you, he's a 39-year-old major champion, Sergio Garcia.
Not a 14-year-old pubescent boy.
He got that huge appearance fee to attend the tournament, and it's probably not the smartest way to behave in a country like Saudi Arabia either.
No, I mean, well, I put something on Twitter saying what options that it might have been, but I think option four in my little list was... Was he uncomfortable about the whole thing, and that's how it's come out, him going a bit mad? Because I don't know.
No, I think this is just, isn't
it? Well, yeah, used to be there. Why has that come out again?
I've got no idea. Maybe there's something happening personally.
Well, yeah, something's happening. I just don't think you get that mad if you've been paid a lot of money to go out there. It's not like it's the Masters or... It's not like...
And he's not in terrible form.
No, he need?
I think that came, that moment in the bunker came after back-to-back birdies as well. And it's just weird. We've not seen any footage of what happened
or
for him to be disqualified.
But it sounds
on the
like
Saturday.
He's just...
It sounds like he's just
kicking stuff
about.
Yeah,
he's just taken the putter to a number of greens because... I think players in all four groups behind Sergio's group complained about him subsequently.
Yeah.
And that's why he was disqualified. So he must have been doing some serious damage to those surfaces.
Yeah, but I'm always interested in the why people do stuff rather than just the what they did. So I want to know why he's done that, because something's troubling him.
I'm hoping that someone will get to the bottom of that. And you'd expect a lot of the journalists that follow the tour closely and are there on site week in, week out, will be speaking to the players that were in the groups behind Sergio to see exactly what happened, or to find out exactly
what
happened.
But even then, that's still a what. I want to know why.
So, well, what do you think, there'll be interviews with Sergio in the coming weeks?
I don't know if will he give anything away, but, you know, it's just, that is just very, very unusual. Even though, yeah, he's got a history of being a bit petulant, but kind of thought those days were a bit gone.
Yeah.
Like you say, now he's... nearly 40, now he's won a major. You know, I don't know. It's just strange.
A zebra ever changes stripes? Or leopard ever changes spots?
Yeah, I think you've gone for the hipster version of that saying. Well, we thought he had, but maybe he hasn't.
Yeah. And the good, Dustin Johnson winning, and Houghton Lee had that incredible round, didn't he, on Saturday?
Yeah, four eagles.
Eagles, three twos on par fours, which is... obscene, really. It's not fair, is it, to make four eagles in a round and three of them twos?
Yeah, it's just strange, but it shows what great form he's in. And I think we said at the start of last week, we thought a big name would win, and one did, Dustin Johnson. I think we might have said it. He maybe wasn't the one we thought would win.
No,
to be honest,
I just thought he was there for the week out. But I just think that with Dustin Johnson, if he becomes relaxed on the golf course, because he's got that that attitude, almost.
You could have almost, if you'd sort of worked backwards, you could almost said who's least likely to be affected by all the sort of bad stuff. Maybe Justin Rose is a little bit more of a sensitive soul, and maybe Sergio is, and they didn't play well, and he just turned up, here I am in some place, let's win, and he did.
In the US, Ricky Fowler got his hands on the, finally got his hands on the Phoenix Open trophy. I thought it was a sense of things coming full circle for Ricky Fowler at this event, because the key shot was maybe the second into 15 on the Sunday, where he went for it this year, and a few years ago he laid up on that hole, which probably cost him the title. And he had a strange incident on 11 as well, which cost him a triple bogey 7.
Yeah, when the ball on the bank, and then he walked to look at the green, and the ball rolled off into the thing with that.
He was taking a penalty drop.
Yeah, taking a penalty drop, put his ball down, and then it rolled away, which incurred
back into
another,
the hazard.
Another shot.
Yeah.
And people were sort of... I normally shout at golf rules because they're stupid. But in this case, I thought there was an element of him putting himself in the way of bad luck. I quite like that threat. People put themselves in the way of good luck. I think he put himself in the way of bad luck by just knocking it into the water in the first place, totally unnecessarily.
Yeah.
You know, you can't...
He just misjudged the chip, didn't he?
Yeah, but it was a sort of mental error. He shouldn't have been flirting with that.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you. He ended up holding a very good 15-footer.
He did
for the 7.
Exactly. So I think it's still got it in him slightly just to switch off a little bit. I was just thinking, well, Tiger would never have done that. Other people wouldn't have done what he's done there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was quite near the end, but maybe luckily for him, there was enough holes, because he messed up on 17 when he should have won it a few years ago. I think he was 1-33. Mm. Well, he did what Brandon Grace did and went in the water. But everyone delighted for him to win, though. And
he's got class, hasn't he? Ricky
he's got
Fowler.
Class. Yeah, I mean, he's talked really well about Jared Lyle and everything. He's just a top man, isn't he?
He's a top man.
Yeah.
And when you compare him with Sergio, I know it's easy to do that this week, isn't
it? But yeah, well, why not do that?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. No. Let's get stuck into this week then. We've got the ISPS Hander Vic Open to begin with. Jason Scrivener is the 12-1 favourite. Ryan Fox, 14-1. Lucas Herbert, 16-1. Can I just call him Jazz?
Jazz. Brian O'Hanrahan.
He's 20-1. Aaron Rye is 20-1. Justin Harding, 25s. Adrian Ortegi, 25-1. 33-1 and bigger the rest. This is a new event on the schedule. It's co-sanctioned by the European Tour and the PGA Tour of Australasia. And it's a unique event as well, because the men and women play concurrently, but not against each other. And the purse for the week is split equally as well. You've done a piece for Roto World Golf, Dave, so you can probably describe in more detail exactly how this event works.
Yeah, well, you've kind of said it there. It's a men and women's event, although they're sort of separate events. But I've seen a few people get a bit confused, thinking, "Oh, what if a woman comes third and then a man's fourth?" Yeah. They're just separate. They're playing on the same courses.
Yes.
Because there's, in sort of Torrey Pines style, there's one course, the Creek course, that is used once over the first 2 days, so everyone has a go there, and then it's the beach course on the weekend. But how it works is, a men's group goes out, then a women's, then a men's, and so it's just sort of, you get them all, you get to see both, but they're playing in their own individual tournaments. So.
What do you think to it as a concept?
Initially I thought, is that a bit forced to be doing that? In thinking about it a bit longer, why not?
Mm. The beach course, by the way, is on the coast, as you mentioned earlier, exposed to the elements. And after 3 weeks on long courses in the desert, some players will feel relieved to have a different test entirely here. We have A course that plays to a par of 72 yet measures under 6,800 yards, which is almost unheard of in modern day golf. But we've got three of them at Pebble Beach as well. And the Creek course, the other course that hosts one round Thursday, Friday, is also under 7,000 yards. Do we have any course history?
Yes,
to look at.
They have played the Victoria Open there. It's still kind of that, but they've become more. They've knocked it down to Vic this time. But
I think that's to differentiate between the two, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, I think so. It just makes it more the fact that now the European Tour are on board. But yeah, looking at past Victorian Open results, which I think go back to 2012, one of the winning years was 7-under.
Mm.
So in usual style with those short courses, they need some sort of defence, and normally it's Mother Nature, isn't it? It's the wind. If the wind really gets up, then you can see something around 10-under winning. Even in the other years, you're not getting silly scores. There's no 24-unders or anything. It's all minus 16 and stuff, a bit less. So a bit of wind, flag placements, a bit of rough, fast greens.
A typical sandbelt course?
I don't know if it's typical. Well, I don't really know, because I'm sort of going off stuff I've read and a few pictures, but it will emerge. It seems like any short course, the defences like that, it's wind and it's fast greens.
Yeah. I've just got the one pick for the event.
Yeah, I've got two.
Okay, I'll let you lead off then.
One thing that did make me laugh in the build-up, we're kind of to give this sort of feeling of what level we're at. Beef is playing this week, one of the star turns. And one of his quotes was, "With guys like Jeff Ogilvie and the like out there, I'm going to have to bring my A game." Well, Jeff Ogilvie is ranked 951st in the world. And who are the like? It's a strange phrase, isn't it? The like. Name them. You know. Yeah, that in all sorts of sporting things.
That is a fantastic quote, isn't it? He's like thought, I know about three players.
Yeah, so I'm going to call them the like.
Yeah.
Jeff Ogilvie, he's won a major, hasn't he? Not checked his world ranking just of late, and there he is, 951st. So the point there...
It's more PGA Tour of Australasia than the European Tour, isn't it?
The point there is not to sort of have a laugh, although, why not? It is a weak field, isn't it? So
yes.
I don't think this takes an awful lot of winning. So I'm going to go for someone who is an Aussie, but he's an Aussie who's in a bit of a different league to most of these, Lucas Herbert.
Yeah, I can see that.
16 to 1 is my sort of each way limit price. He finished 7th in the Dubai Desert Classic, which is a really nice warm up for this. Didn't go to Saudi Arabia. Second round 63 in Dubai, which was really nice. And then we saw him sort of September, October, finished runner up in the Portugal Masters by the sea, 7th in the Alfred Dunhill Links by the sea. You can clearly play by the sea, can't you? Then he was 3rd in the British Masters. So he is a player who is going places. I've read some stuff about him. He's had chats with Ernie Els about being on the President's Cup team and stuff, and he really wants to get inside that world's top 50, and he's on the way to doing that. And I think if he gets in the world top 50, he'll automatically be President's Cup player, won't he, just by definition of building up the points.
Yeah.
The extra bonus here is he's played this course a number of times in this Victoria Open, and the last time we saw him tee it up here, he was 6th. That was 2017, so he knows how to play the course. He shot a final round 74 that year, so I'm not sure whether it was tough that in that final round, but clearly he's made huge strides the last couple of years. He was 6th here a couple of years ago. Got the course form, got the current form. I think he's just in a different league to most of these.
Mm. Lucas Herbert, 16 to 1 for Mr. Tindall. I'm going with Matthew Miller.
Yeah,
as my one pick here at 50s. I just thought the price was. I must admit, a lot of it's getting harder and harder to record this on Tuesday because a lot of the players that I fancied were tipped up yesterday and subsequently cut in the market, which we'll come on to in due course. But I thought there was enough juice in the price of Matthew Miller at 50s to make him a bet. His form on the Australasia Tour is pretty top-notch at the moment. And as we mentioned, this is more of an Australasian event than it is a European Tour event. And his last 6 starts on that tour, he hasn't finished outside the top 15. That includes a tie for 5th in the Australian Open and a tie for 3rd in the Australian PGA Championship, which are two of the top events. He missed the cut in Singapore, but that doesn't unduly concern me. And he's got form at the course as well in the Victoria Open. Finished placed in two of his last five starts at the venue. So I just thought 50-1 was fair on Matthew Miller.
Yeah, so it looks like we're going with the locals here. Because I did think about that. Sometimes you think maybe it's so weak that, you know, the European Tour guys or the PGA Tour guys just turn up and win this because they're in a different planet. But I was just returning to the Australian Open, which you mentioned, and you said Matthew Miller tied fifth. Some of the players he beat that week: Brendan Steele, 12th. Keegan Bradley, 17th. Matt Kuchar, 23rd. So some big American names came over there and, you know, couldn't get it done. So, and there's no one of that standard this time. If Beef might be the best of them, Aaron Rye maybe.
Yeah.
So I think it's a fair shout to go with the local players, and I'm going to do that with my second pick and go for Jake Higginbottom.
Okay.
At 66-1, another of the young Aussies, 25. He won the New Zealand Open as an amateur, actually, so he's clearly got a bit of pedigree there. But looking at course form, he was sixth. Alongside Lucas Herbert a couple of years ago when he last played the course, so he knows how to do that. I actually read some quotes that week from Brett Rumford, who had played with him in round three when he shot 66, and he said, "I really like the chances of Jake Higginbottom because he can sort of flight his ball low in the wind. He just is a good striker." So
that's interesting.
Yeah, so I thought that bodes well if it's going to be a bit. Do we know it's going to be really windy? Have you seen much of a forecast?
I've not seen that much of a forecast. Yeah, I think the wind is due to blow.
Yeah, so that's quite good. And then I read another piece about Jake Higginbottom where he himself had said, normally over Christmas, away go the clubs. He's just enjoying himself. This year he thought, that's not worked. I'm going to really stay, you know, focus this time.
Okay.
So he said he maybe had 10 days off at some point, but he got back into it straight away, had his coach over to keep him sharp. And he's actually said this year still feels like last year. So in his head, he doesn't feel like he's had a big gap or any rust has developed. So in regard to that, he came out and played the Singapore Open a few weeks ago. I think Sergio played it, didn't he? A few of the big names went over and played that. And he was 18th. I thought it was a pretty decent effort for someone who traditionally has started the year slowly. So I think in his head, he's thought, right, I've come out, changed my plan slightly over Christmas, come out and finished 18th, three rounds of 17 and 69. Pretty solid effort. And before Christmas, we saw him 28th in the Indonesian Masters, three good rounds and just a strange Saturday one. And maybe most significant of all, possibly, he was 9th in the Hong Kong Open, which is a better field than this is. And it's played on a really sort of small yardage, isn't it? A very short track.
Small greens as
well. Yeah, so just putting some bits together there, I thought he was a decent 66-1 shout.
You mentioned Aaron Rye as well. He was one that
Hong Kong, obviously.
Yeah, Hong Kong, definitely. His performance in Hong Kong was good. His form in the desert on courses that won't have suited easily strong enough to suggest he shows up here, but he's been pretty well supported into 20-1. I liked Adrian Ortega as well. He's 25-1. And I thought Justin Harding of the guys at the top was very interesting because his game is... He's catapulted up the world rankings in the last 12 months. And
he had a chance to win in Mauritius, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did.
And he didn't quite get it done. And then he missed a couple of cuts, but I think they were perhaps a reaction to not getting the win. And then he's come back out.
He's had a couple of really low rounds,
really
hasn't he?
Well, hasn't he? Yeah.
So I think 25-1 is pretty fair on Justin Harding.
The only thing with him, you're slightly guessing on whether he plays these courses sort of well.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't see any Australian form.
Don't think he's got any, has he?
No.
So, yeah, that is an unknown
reservation, yeah.
Any others you want to mention before we
Who were the ones who got backed, did you notice then?
Yeah, Aaron Rye and Adrian Ortega.
Oh, the two Europeans. Yeah, I wondered if some more locals had got
No, they were well supported yesterday. Ben Coley tipped those two up on his Sporting Live piece, which affects the market, and those were the two. Because I had a look yesterday.
Yeah.
And those were the two that jumped out at me, and then I read his piece. Right. And so
yeah, I think I just sort of went with the let's just not presume that the Euros will come in and be in a different league. I don't think that's the case. Especially because there's been quite a few events here, so a lot of these local Aussies have played it 5-6 times.
Yep. Shall we move on?
Yes.
Let's talk about the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am 2019. And Dustin Johnson, after his win last week, is 5-1 favourites. Jason Day is 8-1. Tony Finau, Jordan Spieth and Tommy Fleetwood, all 22s. By the way, Fleetwood was the real early market mover.
Yeah.
Oh, do you fancy him?
Nah, some ones.
Oh, right.
Shortened.
I saw you grimacing over there. He was 33-1 when William Hill... We're getting the prices up first every week now on both tours. And he was 33-1 and that was immediately cut. He's 22-1 now. And Matt Kuchar, Phil Mickelson, Adam Scott and Patrick Cantlay, all 25s. Ches Reavie, Shane Lowry, Paul Casey, Patrick Reed and Brandon Grace, all 33s. And it's 40-1 and bigger the rest of them. This is a staple of the PGA Tour, the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, and it's always an intriguing event, but it's possible that intrigue intensifies this year because in just a few months, Pebble Beach will host the US Open. Does that affect your thinking going into this week? Because reports have suggested that they've already started preparing for that major in mid-June. The rough slightly thicker than usual and the fairway slightly tighter as well. So has that affected your mindset coming into this?
No.
Okay, fine.
No,
it is still a pro-am and I'm sure it will be set up very fair for the field of 156 as well. But yeah. I just thought it was interesting anyway.
And I presume they've not done anything to the two other courses that are used.
No, I think they will play as they usually
so
play.
So the more you go into it, maybe it starts to dilute a little bit that it's going to be sort of half towards the US Open or whatever. Not half.
A couple of rounds, I suppose. Yeah. I mean, the couple of rounds at Pebble Beach might be more difficult than they usually are, perhaps. Yeah. As you mentioned, both the amateurs and the professionals will get a crack at Pebble Beach. For two rounds, assuming they make the 54-hole cut.
Yeah.
Spyglass Hill and Monterey Peninsula's Shore Course. And all three courses are under 7,000 yards. And Pebble and Spyglass are par 72s. Monterey is a par 71. And looking through the roll call of winners of this event, we've had high-profile winners and also some real
Skinners. Shocks
down the years.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? You get... like Dustin Johnson winning it, Jordan Spieth turns up, sort of going further back, Vijay Singh, Tiger always used to win here, but then you've got these bizarre ones, like Ted Potter Jr. last year.
Vaughn Taylor.
Yeah. So clearly...
And you've got, even in those years where you've had those real outsiders, they've lowered the colours of some leading lights, haven't they? When Ted Potter won, he beat Dustin Johnson. Phil Mickelson looked like he was destined to win when Vaughn Taylor won. So it's a bizarre event in that regard.
So it's a strategy to pick a big outsider, but how on earth do you pick the right one?
It's tough, isn't it?
I going a long way back, I have been lucky enough to pick the winner of this at a three-figure price.
Okay.
And I can't remember his name. Matt somebody. Is that you? God, how awful. I should remember that. It was the year, I'm going to Google it while we speak, it was the year when Pat Perez went mad.
Oh, right.
Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that, I must admit.
We thought Sergio was sort of a bit over the line in Saudi Arabia. Pat Perez had a 2 or 3 shot lead and he just started smashing up the 18th tee when he hit it.
Right.
Yeah, when he hit it to the right, yeah. So that's quite a... That was quite
an iconic moment in the event's history.
Yeah, so I presume he's not playing this week, is he?
You said a few moments ago as well that you're not affected by maybe a slight change in course dynamic at Pebble Beach. Has the forecast affected your thinking? Because it's meant to be particularly windy on Friday, Saturday and Sunday, which the wind is the main defence at the Monterey Peninsula, and that could be a huge factor this week.
Yeah, to some extent, but then so you've got that information. Who do you then think it helps or hinders? Because I think they can all play in the wind. Dustin Johnson can play in the wind.
Yeah. Well, my first pick.
Have you gone for a wind specialist?
I have gone for a wind specialist.
Okay, well, you lead. Yeah, I've got two players. Yeah.
Have you found that winner yet? By the way,
I'm looking.
Are you looking now?
Yeah. Matt somebody. How could I forget? But anyway, the point with that was to say that some of these skinners, you think, how on earth can you pick him?
Yeah.
It's just impossible. Can't I find it? It's ridiculous. Keep going. You go with your pick while I dig it out.
Okay. My first pick is Brant Snedeker.
Oh, I think very much a tournament specialist.
Yeah, I think he's just massively overpriced. He's 50-1 here, Brant Snedeker.
He was overpriced the other week, wasn't he, somewhere?
Farmers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think this is a better venue for Snedeker than Torrey Pines, personally. I think sometimes the market gets it wrong, and I think 50s definitely underestimates his chance. He's been sent off 16-1 in this event in the past. He's won it twice. He'll handle the poor conditions that are forecast on Friday, Saturday and Sunday better than pretty much anyone else in the field. And he's not missed a cut since the Open Championship. His short game and putting are as strong as ever. And I don't think you can underestimate how important scrambling is this week, given these are the smallest greens the players will face all season. Everyone will miss these greens. And it might just be that he's slightly off the boil at the moment, but his record at this course is so strong, I'm sure he'll be inspired by this event once again. And I thought 50-1 seriously underestimated his chance.
Yeah,
so Brant Snedeker.
I can certainly see that. I finally found him.
Matt, oh, good.
Matt Gogel.
I was going to say Matt Gogel, but I didn't want to just guess.
It was based on the fact that he'd finished runner-up there a couple of years earlier.
Right,
so
okay.
So there was some logic to that, where I'm not sure what Ted Potter or Vaughan Taylor would really... Had Vaughan Taylor got some form now?
I think he had.
Yeah. But Ted Potter, if you're picking Ted Potter, how have you managed that?
You're a miracle worker.
Yeah. Let's go for the front end of the betting for mine. And maybe you've got him in there too. But I couldn't let, even though he's been clipped a little bit, I couldn't let Tony Finau go off here.
22-1. Yes. I've not. My three guys are all relative outsiders.
Yeah, I think Tony Finau. So you've got 5-1 Dustin Johnson, 8-1 Jason Day, and then there's this big jump to 22s.
Yeah.
I think if Tony Finau had done anything at all last week, he'd be filling in that gap, maybe 16s.
Yeah, I get that.
He missed the cut, we can't deny that, in Phoenix. But, Dave, that was the fourth year in a row he's missed the cut at Phoenix. Mm. That isn't his course. That, to me, it's almost irrelevant. What we do know this week is he's playing a windy track, it's by the sea, Poana Greens in California, all those things are very much tick, tick, tick for Tony Finau.
Yes.
So I think if you were sitting down at the start of the year and thinking, where might Tony Finau, because we think he's going to have a big year, don't we, on here?
Yeah.
I think lots of people do. Name one of the events where Tony Finau's got a massive chance. I think this is definitely one of them. Mm. And I just think we've been given a little bit of a boost on the price. I mean, he was
because of that miscut.
He was 25s when I, so the point was even more stronger.
That was why you were grimacing.
Yeah, 10 minutes ago, but he's been cut. But even so, 22s on Tony Finau, I think is still very, very playable. I mean, if he's going to start doing something big, I think this is a very obvious place for him to do it. Before that miscut in Phoenix, which, as I've said, fourth year in a row he's missed the cut in Phoenix, forget it. He was 13th at Torrey Pines. That pretty decent, isn't it? That's solid enough. He's only played this once, but he was 23rd, so I think there's some little bit of evidence that he's going to take to this event. So last four starts in California, 13th, 2nd, 6th, 2nd. I don't see why he doesn't have a massive week.
Okay, 22-1 Tony Finau is Dave's first selection. You've got a couple of picks, haven't you?
Yes, I've got one more, but you've got two more.
I've got two more, yeah. I'm going to go with... I do think course form is very important here, but I'm going to go with someone who has no course form.
Oh, all right.
Matt Fitzpatrick is my second selection.
You think he's a good fit?
Yeah, I think he's a fine fit for this. You think of Crohn's, where he has such an incredible record, Fitzpatrick, including having won it last year. And
small greens.
Small greens. I think he's just got such a good record on courses like this. And this is all about wedge play and scrambling, isn't it, basically, Pebble Beach. And those are Fitzpatrick's primary assets. And he comes into this having finished second in Hong Kong, fourth in Singapore, tied 16th in the Dubai Desert Classic. His greens in regulation numbers were... in Dubai were solid, as they usually are, and I think even with his lack of experience stateside, this is a quite a unique event, and I think 50-1 Fitzpatrick, given he comes into this in cracking form, and this is a fine fit for him, I think that's a good price.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. When you compare it to Fleetwood, I think they might have a similarish chance this week, and yet he's so much bigger, isn't he?
Yeah, I think Fleetwood's got more scope, hasn't he? Yeah. As like an actual bona fide superstar, because he's got he's got different abilities to Fitzpatrick. I think Fitzpatrick's going to be held back in the long term by his lack of length, isn't he? Which doesn't come into play this week at Pebble Beach, whereas Fleetwood has got, he's got all the tools, and he's contended in major company as well, where Fitzpatrick maybe hasn't quite yet.
But the thing with Fleetwood could easily win this week, but 22-1 going in blank on a course or courses in an event, I think it's more of a risk, isn't it?
I think when you compare it to 50s on Fitzpatrick, definitely.
Well, I'm going for a player who's played it once before.
Okay.
But he did finish tied 20th, which was enough to sort of kick me over the line with him. Brandon Grace.
All right, okay. 33-1.
Yeah. Obviously, we saw him last week have a big chance to win in Phoenix. Kind of messed up a bit on the 17th, didn't he? I thought it was a bit of fate that Ricky Fowler was going to win that week. But Brandon Grace was the guy who looked set to spoil Ricky's party, but he didn't in the end, finish runner-up. But four really good rounds. That was his debut in that event, so he can go somewhere and learn the ropes pretty quick. 67, 64, pair 69s on the weekend. Didn't do anything wrong, really, apart from that penultimate hole, which he probably wishes he could have back. But you talked about the weather being a bit of a test. He's a low ball hitter. We've seen him play lots of good tournaments in wind. He's a back-to-back winner in Qatar, which is always windy. We saw him, didn't we, nearly win a US Open at Chambers Bay, wasn't it, when he had a big chance to win. So obviously
I think it was Jason Sobel who tweeted saying that he was thinking back to that 17th and overcompensated last week and hooked into the water.
Yeah, possibly. But both events, he got the each way money, didn't he? You could say at least. I mean, he's a top player, isn't he? And he's won on the PGA Tour before, so it's not like it's something he needs to that's holding him back, and he needs to sort of break through. And of course, Dave, let's stick with the theme. Where did he win on the PGA Tour?
Harbour Town.
Yeah, which has small greens.
Yeah.
So you sort
of, and this is
by the coast,
yeah,
windy.
By the coast, yeah.
So there's some nice elements, I think, running through Grace. But I think runner-up last week, he's really, you know, shown that he's in good nick. So I can see why he's not maybe 25s or something. But I think you could argue that he might be further up the betting a little bit than he is, because he's a proven winner, even though we've seen him, we mentioned two cases of him mucking up there, but a lot of wins on the European Tour, one in America on a course with some similar traits. So I just thought Brandon Grace can continue his good form.
Yeah,
33
okay.
to 1.
I'm going with Nick Watney as my last selection at three figures.
I used to back him every year in this for like
100-1. Yeah.
And then I gave up.
Well, hopefully you're giving up 1 year too soon. Yeah. A couple of years too soon, because I think there have been definite signs of revival from Nick Watney in the last few months, and hopefully he can continue to improve this week at an event in which he has a decent history. He had a couple of horrors last week in Phoenix on Sunday, but still managed to post a 39th place finish, and that was his seventh straight cut made, which is something I look for. I do like that consistency when considering whether or not to pull the trigger. And Watney actually gained strokes all four rounds with his approach play last week and putted well, and his short game was good at the Farmers. And I think Nick Watney, given that he has got that pretty strong course form, he's finished 6th and 2nd at this event in the last decade, and 2 years ago was 14th. I thought he was well worth chancing at 100-1.
Yeah. They play, what's that event they play sort of in November? There's like a sort of Monterey Bay Invitational or something. I'm sure he's won that or done well in that.
Okay.
But yeah, I think I read once that he said this was his favourite tournament, but then you could probably say that about 40% of the field. I mean, Pebble Beach is a spectacular place, isn't it?
It's just an iconic venue, isn't it, as well? So, so Nick Watney, my third selection. Do you want to talk about any of the other leading contenders before we do a hashtag your odds? By the way, the hashtag your odds hasn't been posted on the William Hill website yet, but it is for Pebble Beach. You need to tweet using that hashtag Your Odds to at Will Hill. Is it at William? At William Hill. Is it at William Hill? I've forgotten the Twitter handle momentarily. At William Hill, yeah. Using that hashtag Your Odds, and the traders will price it up, and we'll have those top 10 and top 20 markets out shortly. Should we do the hashtag Your Odds before we talk about the top of the market?
Yeah.
I'm going with Nick Watney to finish in the top 20.
Right,
all eggs in Watney's basket this week.
As they say. Yeah,
so I'm going for him to finish in the top 20. And I was saying to you off air, this has been my most successful market so far this season.
Well, yeah, and my worst.
Yeah, given I've had three from four land. So hopefully we can get two in the same week. So Nick Watney top 20, obviously no betting available, but I'll tweet it out when that price comes available as well.
Yeah,
your part.
I'm going to go with Ches Reavy.
Top 10.
Yes, top 10. I think we can go top 10 with him.
Yeah.
A very simple way of looking at it. He's had three top 10s in his last six starts. A fourth. Well, let's go for a start in time order. CJ Cup 7th, 3rd in the Sony Open in Hawaii, 4th in Phoenix last week. That was his local event last week. And the thing I liked about it just sort of turned into a top four. I think if he'd led from the start, I think he might have had the weight of the world on his shoulders, and he would have just gone, oh.
He definitely backdoored in, didn't he?
Yeah, so I think he's come out of that week thinking, great, gone home, pleased everyone, was fourth without too much pressure early on. Hits it really, really straight, doesn't he? Second in driving accuracy his last two events. And in this event, Pebble Beach, struggled maybe early on, but then last 3 years, 26 in 2016, and then last year he was runner-up. So I think at a venue where he's finished runner-up in this sort of form, I think top 10 is very, very doable. Looked at him on the outright to 33s, but it's a fraction too short.
Yeah, just a bit skinny.
I think he's more of a top 10er, isn't he?
Okay. I'll make sure I tweet that out when there's a price available. So we're going for the hashtag Your Odds, which we'll have a point on. Nick Watney to finish in the top 20, and Ches Reavy to finish in the top 10. Others worthy of mention then. Top end of the market. We attempted by DJ. Incredible course record. Should have won the US Open when Graham McDowell won it. That was a sour moment in my betting history.
Were you on him that year?
Yeah, I was, yeah. He was 40-1,
I think.
It was
a big price, wasn't it? For some people saying, oh, it's really obvious because he's won the Pebble Beach normal event, and then, what did he take? He just imploded from the start,
yeah,
didn't he?
I think it was the second or third hole where he was short right at the green, and he fluffed a couple of chips, and it all unravelled quickly.
Yeah.
That year for Dustin Johnson.
We've seen Justin Rose win in California, go to the Middle East and miss the cut. Do you think it might apply in reverse?
It's happened in the past for Dustin Johnson, where he's had that transatlantic flight and he's performed badly the following week. But then it's happened, he's come from the Open Championship and won in Canada. So it's... There's
less of a time gap though.
Yeah, I think it's an issue. I think it's an issue. I wouldn't put anyone off backing him. I think if 5-1, maybe a bit short.
Yeah, if you're backing someone at 5-1, you maybe want everything in your favour.
I think I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Jason Day at 8-1.
Every chance, but it's a bit skinny for me. That
I agree. Jordan Spieth.
Who knows?
Yeah.
I think he's still working it out.
22-1. Yeah. I must admit, I liked Adam Scott from the top end. I can see
terrible course for him.
Yeah, he's not got good course. So it's weird though,
doesn't
that, isn't
make
it?
Sense,
because it doesn't
though.
Make sense.
No.
Because you think about his links form throughout his career.
Yeah.
We know that from his play in Australia, he can handle windy conditions as well.
Yeah.
Doesn't really make sense, does
he's
it?
He's done well at Riviera, which is another course with small greens.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. So possibly.
I mean, can he gain 3.5 strokes putting again?
Yeah, that's a sort
like
of big
he did
if,
a fortnight
yes.
ago. That's a big. He's changed his putting grip. He's locking the grip into the a la Matt Kuchar into the forearm now. So maybe that's going to be the remedy he needs to put consistently well. But we've not got that much evidence yet, have we?
No. So there's a bit of doubt there. What do you think about Matt Kuchar? I have a feeling, you know, sort of players have their spells of the just. Great for a while. I think maybe he's just starting to drift out of his. I know he was fourth last week, but he was all over the shop, kind of late in the round. Yeah, shot 75, and it was looked like someone coming down from his peak.
Like I said to you, I didn't see any of the golf on Sunday night. Off air, I said this, but conditions were difficult, weren't they? As well.
Yeah.
There were a lot of weird scores.
Funny feeling he'll settle in. He'll just dip a little bit now and then come back.
Peak.
Yeah, so he's got a couple of sixes at the course. But
I thought you might have gone for Phil Mickelson.
Well, probably because I did last week and he was so bad.
Yeah.
I suppose the only thing, when he was runner-up in the Desert Classic, he sounded a bit bemused that he was playing so well. So
yeah.
Because sometimes it's difficult. People read different things into people's quotes, but normally when he's quite positive, it does come out. I know he's from California and you're kind of born positive, and that's kind of the, everything's a bit of a ray of sunshine, but he tends to tell you when he's playing well. So for him to be sort of doubting himself and yet he was playing well, I thought underlying there was some things maybe not right, and maybe we saw that in Phoenix.
Okay,
so not for me.
Should we wrap up then?
Shane Lowry, what about him?
I thought it was short. I thought it was short in the betting at 33-1. I mean, he'll love it, won't he? You'd think.
Should do.
Yeah, but I just thought that. Yeah, is he a lot better than Matthew Fitzpatrick?
No, so yeah, I can say from if you put it in those terms, yeah.
Let's wrap up then. I think we've waffled on long enough here.
Let's start in the Vic Open then.
Yeah,
I'll go a point and a half each way on Lucas Herbert at 16s, and just half a point each way on Jake Higginbottom at 66s.
I'm going a point each way on Matthew Miller at 50-1.
And then in Pebble Beach, one of my favourite events of the year, 1.5 points each way on Tony Finau at 22s, and a point each way on Brandon Grace at 33s.
Yeah, I'm going to go 1.5 points each way on Brant Snedeker because I think he's overpriced at 50-1. A point each way on Matthew Fitzpatrick at 50-1, and a point each way on Nick Watney at 100-1. And the hashtag your odds, which hasn't been priced up yet but will be on the website, will be Nick Watney to finish in the top 20 and Ches Reavy to finish in the top 10. Player you don't want to win? Have you got one?
Probably if DJ won, I'd kick myself a bit. But that's a bit dumb. Maybe, probably Mickelson then, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say mine's Adam Scott, I think.
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning into the podcast, folks. Any comments you've got about the podcast, do drop us a line on Twitter at D Kellner and at Dave Tindall Golf. Check out all the betting on the William Hill website and on the app at williamhill.com. And thank you for listening to this edition of the Golf Podcast. And myself and Dave, we will be back next week.